You're listening to the Fayetteville 411 podcast produced by the City of Fayetteville, where you'll get information about city government and the programs and services we provide. You'll get topics of interest and an inside look into the various departments that help keep our city moving. I'm Sherry Croft.
And I'm John Salling. Thanks for joining us today. We have a special episode of the Fayetteville 411 podcast. Our marketing and communications director, Lauren Beimer, sat down recently with Assistant City Manager Jeff Yates and City Manager Douglas Hewitt to discuss the upcoming budget season for the city. Without further ado, here's Lauren Beimer.
Hello and welcome. We're here with Assistant City Manager Jeff Yates and City Manager Doug Hewitt. And today we'll be talking about the budget and the priorities for the City of Fayetteville. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are we doing today?
Great.
Excellent.
First, I know we want to kind of dive into the numbers, but I wanted to talk about priorities of this year's budget and how these priorities were determined, and then we can talk about some of the numbers and see where we take the conversation from there. So, in a very wavetop basic level, where does the city derive the city priorities for the budget?
Well, as the manager, I derive my budget priorities from the council, and the council derives their budget priorities from the citizens. And the citizens, over the last probably 20 years that I've been affiliated with the City of Fayetteville, starting at probably in 2004, we have looked to the citizens in the development of a strategic plan to help guide those parties and identify areas where they and the council feel we should focus. Traditionally, and as is represented in the budget book that's here before us, those priorities center around livability, public safety, as well as economic development. I'm not only planning for today, but also planning for tomorrow. Being a historic city as we are, a lot of the work that we do surprisingly also deals with honoring those traditions that we have as Fayetteville, City of Fayetteville, one of the largest cities in North Carolina, sixth largest city in the state of North Carolina. And as our Mayor Pro Tem and councilmembers like to say, we're the largest neighbor to the largest military base in the world.
Right.
And so those things help guide the priorities that we develop and fund each year in the budget.
So Jeff, can we talk about some of the specific numbers that we're looking at? You know, revenue, expenditures, some of those things that, you know, at the wave top level, so that people can kind of get an understanding of where our budget sits in relation to some of the services that are provided?
Sure. So the total budget across the entire city is about $311 million. We have about $210 million in our general fund, which is funded primarily through property taxes and sales taxes. The largest portion of that being the ad valorem tax, which are the property taxes you pay on your house and your car. We also do fees through our enterprise funds, which is solid waste, stormwater, transit, airport, those kind of things, which they're supported by user fees, federal grants, and so forth.
Okay. So the budget process incorporates what you were talking about, Doug, with feedback through either council or directly to you, and then the services that are provided. So when we're talking safety and other services, can we talk about how we look at those? I know this year we've gone through quite the process with SL1s, SL2s, and SL3s because of the way the county has changed their method of calculating tax and revenue for the city. Can you talk about the process that we've gone through up to this point?
Sure. So what you're referring to is service level one, service level two, and service level three. So when the county changed the calculation methodology for the sales taxes, which means how we distribute or how the state distributes the sales taxes to the local communities, the city lost about $7 to $10 million annually. So to make up for that, we have to look at our services and our core services and what are we providing to the residents. So in this year's budget, instead of starting with an incremental approach where we grow the budget just by 2 or 3% annually, what we've said is, okay, if we have revenue of $200 million, what are the services we can provide for $200 million? Then going back through, and you refer to service level one, and what we've said is that's our base level of service. So the service level one exercise is trying to fit the services in at the budget, at the revenue we have available, then identifying those services that don't fit at the revenue level we have. And then the service level three that you talked about, are any of those new and expanded services that the residents or the council are looking at having and want to, based on need, based on demand, are wanting to expand. So really we're starting with trying to balance the budget based on the current level of services and the current revenues, and then council will have a policy discussion about what revenue increases they're looking at. They have a very limited pot of revenues that they can increase, mainly ad valorem and then fees for service, but fees for service are not a large chunk of the budget. Really, it's around ad valorem taxes. So that'll be the discussion we're having and the exercise we're going through with all of the directors and all the departments to be sure we know what the cost of services are.
And so going back to the services that are desired by the city from the residents, can either of you talk about the public input piece of this? We've recently talked about resident surveys, but are there other means and methods that we pull information from the residents and set those priorities?
Yes. Again, being the sixth largest city and the ninth largest state and the most powerful country in the world, I like to alliterate things like that. But our citizens come from all around the United States and really all around the country, around the globe. And they have a high expectation, not only for the lifestyle that they have here, but they remember the lifestyle they had in other places. And they want to bring that to the city of Fayetteville. And we are a large metropolitan area. And so a lot of the services that people demand aren't just the demands, they need them for their daily lives, such as transit service, such as solid waste services, such as clean drinking water, such as places for the kids to recreate and to play, class level one of fire protection services, enhanced 911, all of those things that come with living in a big city. But we inform that not only with the citizen survey, which you mentioned, we also inform that a great deal through the fact that we ask the citizens what they want. And twice in the last probably 5 years, the city council has asked the voters, do you want more in parks and recreation? Via a GO bond referendum. And the citizens overwhelmingly said, yes, we want more parks and recreation. Last time we asked, I think it was 2 years ago, we asked the citizens, do you want more infrastructure? Do you want more housing, affordable housing? Do you want more public safety? And the citizens overwhelmingly said, yes, we do. And so it's not only just a citizen survey, it is a direct ask to them, do you want more? Are you willing to pay more? And then also to, again, looking at what our peers do, looking at what large cities do, and looking where we are now, where we want to grow.
So that's a great segue. You had said something there that really perked my ears up with the lifestyle in other places before they get here. We are, the neighbor to Fort Liberty, and there's a lot of people that come into our community, and then, unfortunately, they leave at some point. But, with things like the GO bond, Jeff, can you talk about how these primary sources of revenue, how stable are they? And, is there any concern for residents as we move forward? We know the ad valorem per capita calculation changed, but moving forward, now that we are set in this method, can you talk about the stability of it?
Absolutely. So one of the interesting things about changing over from sales tax to ad valorem is sales taxes are highly sensitive to economic change, which means in a recession, when you stop going out and buying things, the city would receive less revenue. When you change over to ad valorem because of the revaluation cycles in North Carolina, that's a very stable revenue. So we traded that sales tax for a revenue that is highly stable but lower growth. So on average, we could expect annual growth on property taxes to be right around 1.5%, whereas sales taxes are in the 6-7% range on average until you hit an economic downturn. But on the ad valorem side, that economic downturn typically doesn't impact the ad valorem value. So while we traded a highly sensitive, higher growth revenue for a stable, lower growth revenue, the challenge is that when that growth doesn't match up with your expenditure side inflationary growth, meaning fuel, the cost of the goods and services that we buy, pavement, concrete, building materials, those kind of personnel costs, then you're kind of you have to find other revenue sources, or you have to figure out how you keep that rate in line with the cost of service. So while we went to a more stable, it's just a lower growth, which creates its own challenges.
So we keep talking about growth and expenditures and all of that. Can you, in a very succinct and simple way, talk about the general fund versus enterprise fund and the difference between those and what constitutes the funding methods of each of those?
Sure. So the easiest way to think of it is enterprise funds are like businesses. So for instance, the city has, I believe, four that include the airport, solid waste, stormwater, and transit, which means they're funded by user fees and grants and other sources other than general tax dollars.
So when I get my stormwater bill in the mail, that is part of the enterprise fund for stormwater.
Correct. So when you pay your stormwater bill, that goes directly to the stormwater program. On the converse of that is the general fund, which is all the general government stuff, police, fire, parks and recreation, all those different things that you'd expect your government to do that are not business-like, and providing for the general good, if you will, right?
Sure.
So the ad valorem is what supports that bucket, because you don't want to pay a fee every time the police show up or every time you call 911 and we send out a fire truck. You just want those to come. So what residents pay for in their ad valorem are those general government services. The others, then the business type, generally are based on use. For instance, the airport's funded by user fees. If you fly in and out of the airport,
right,
then you're paying for the airport facility. The city's not paying for that. The regular taxpayer, while is an owner, but they don't pay for the fees for that.
And that's why it's so important to find the efficiencies in what we do for things like solid waste. So the
Correct.
More efficient we are and the more we stay on track, the ultimate cost decreases for, or holds true for, the residents in the Fayetteville, correct?
That's correct. So we run solid waste like a business,
mm-hmm.
except unlike a business, we don't take a return on investment necessarily. What we say is we want to run this at exactly break even to the fees. So we charge just enough through the fees to cover the cost of operations.
Okay. So can we talk about capital projects for a moment and how that affects the budget and where we are with projects across the city?
Sure. So we do a number of projects, and I'll talk about the budget, and then Doug can talk about the specific projects we have going on. When we have projects, Doug mentioned the general obligation bonds. We have large number of projects. So we have $97 million that's been authorized. We had a little bit more than $30 million originally authorized for parks and recreation. And those projects are ongoing. So we have to buy those goods. When we estimate the cost of those, it can be 3-4 years out from construction. So you see inflation, those things. And then also when they come online, for instance, we're opening a second senior center. And when we do that, we'll have to staff it, provide for utilities and those things. So they have a direct and indirect impact to the budget over time, and then eventually the debt service for those.
So it's not just a one and done, we built the building and we're complete. There's actually second, third order effects of manning the building.
Absolutely.
Residual costs of electricity, water, etc.
Absolutely.
And that's even exacerbated when you look at CIP items and technology improvement items, such as police radios, where it is an annual basis that you're paying for subscription services, or in the case that we discussed even yesterday, you're going to have to go in and actually replace $400,000 worth of radios.
Right.
Because technology has migrated or changed. There are lots of parts of the budget that aren't sexy. Opening up a fire station, doing a parks and recreation facility, a senior center, all of those are sexy. Those are things where everyone comes out and people can use them. But the city also operates on things which aren't so sexy, such as having to pay for roads, having
right.
to put in and install sidewalks. And we have spent millions of dollars installing street lights in the city since we did a major annexation in 2005. All of those things, again, people expect living in a large city like Fayetteville, but they largely go unnoticed unless they're not there.
Right.
But we have had to spend literally millions of dollars of retrofitting and putting in basic public infrastructure. And it even gets even more pronounced when you look at something like stormwater, where it's not only the fact that we are behind the curve, we have actually a stormwater issue in the community as well. All of those items get tied into our CIP, capital improvements plans, or technology improvement plans as well.
I think that's really important to note too, because the council has had a very large emphasis on safe streets. We've applied for a few grants like Safe Streets for All that mm-hmm. we've received. And, District 1 in particular is focused on around schools, ensuring that there's sidewalks that go in so that, like you said, if you don't have it, you notice it. But when sidewalks are everywhere, people take it for granted. I can remember when I moved here in 2001, how when I would try to go run, it was easier to run on dirt trails and off the main roads because of the safety factor involved. And so I think as people look back through, you know, the last decade or even the last 2 decades, they should be able to see the transformation of how much safer, how much brighter our streets have been. The transformations downtown have taken place. And, you know, all to the point of how the city manager and the senior staff manage the budget and the budget process.
That's our hope. Again, coming in 2004, you were here in 2001. Anyone who's been here that long or longer, you can clearly see a change in our community for the better as you drive along Bragg Boulevard, as you drive along Murchison, as you drive along Riley Road. The council has spent an awful lot of time and an awful lot of effort and money in improving the corridors, and hopefully from the corridors improving the city as well. Not only takes into account the look and the feel, but also the economic opportunities for future generations too.
So speaking of that, the economic development, what investments does the city look at for economic development and job creation with regards to the budget and the budget process?
Well, I'll take some of this, and I think Jeff has some of it as well. We, like most large cities in the United States, received a tremendous amount of money from the federal government, from ARPA, American Rescue and Recovery
Act.
I think it was something like $40 million. We've programmed a tremendous amount of that through our Economic Community Development Department to create economic opportunities for small businesses. We have plowed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, and improving the corridor, some of them I just mentioned, creating opportunities for businesses. And we actually are trying to launch a grant program now that could give up to like a $100,000 qualifying grant to some of these small businesses along the corridors and really throughout the city as they make investments and as well bring on additional employees. So we've done a lot there. But one of the things I think I'm proudest of as manager is I came back to Fayetteville after being gone for a few years in 2015, and I came back as the Director of Inspections and Permitting. And in that role, my job was to fix what at that time was a broken permitting process that we had in the city that was delaying the issuance of permits and also the completion of inspections for building projects around the city for weeks. And through really the work of the staff, the work of our IT team to help us with some technology fixes, we were able to completely turn that around to where I would say we were probably one of the most development-friendly communities in the state of North Carolina, and I still like to think that we are. But starting from that viewpoint, when we first got on lockdown because of COVID, and it's really kind of interesting to think it's like 4 years ago today, or yesterday actually, when the restrictions started coming to the United States. And I remember joking with the team that was here, I said, you know, this is going to change how we do business. And probably too glibly used to say it's like the zombie apocalypse. But out of that, Fayetteville was ready. We were ready in that as soon as we were able to get federal money, we plowed more than $1 million into the ground floor of City Hall to make a development center. So again, continue with that idea that government is here to provide, as Jeff said, a service. That is our number one product of service. And we are here to aid businesses and doing business. We're here to aid residents and enjoying our community. We're here to make sure that our visitors are safe. And I think that everything that we've done, again, since 2015, particularly as we went into COVID, and even now, is really designed around how can we aid economic development, because we realize, as the council continually stresses to us as well, that we're here to help facilitate the continued growth and development of our community, because we understand that the citizens can't pay for this with property taxes. And as Jeff talked about a moment ago, sales tax can be somewhat fickle. And so what we really need is investment from the private sector, and that comes through making sure you're a development-ready community.
Yeah, and I know that there's a close bond between, you know, Robert Van Gien's over at the Fayetteville-Cumberland Economic Community Development, the county, and us. You know, what's good for the county is good for the city, and what's good for the city is good for the county, all right?
That is true.
So
I think Doug made a really good point, is the object as a city in our economic development strategies is to create a fertile ground for development and also work with, we largely work with workforce housing. So our community and economic development group, our ECD, Economic and Community Development. The idea is trying to help and develop those spaces and create opportunities for workforce housing. One of the biggest challenges we have in the city is affordable rents. Being close to the base, there's an impact to that, and available housing. We have a large portion of rental housing in the city. So creating spaces so that workers can be there. When we talk to the private community, we talk to businesses, finding skilled labor is a challenge. So we don't fund schools. We don't fund the community college, all those other things. So we really are, as a city, we can create fertile ground and we can help develop those housing projects. But we have to partner, as you mentioned, with the county and with our local partners in the universities and the community college to try to create a workforce that provides those workers for those businesses and makes it attractive. Because when companies look at coming, that's what they look for. And there are other things such as utilities, power, water, sewer, developable tracts of land, all those different things. But primarily the city's interaction is creating that fertile ground through the planning and development process, but then also with workforce housing and creating space for those workers.
So we just have a couple more questions, and I enjoy this conversation. I am actually learning, been through the process a couple times, still learning every day about the budget, still trying to squeeze Jeff for a little more money for our department ourselves. But, you know, so budget transparency. I know that, you know, our department, marketing and communications, is a big part of the budget transparency. But can either of you speak to the steps that are being taken to enhance the transparency and accountability of the budget and the budget process?
Again, I think we can do this in one, two step. I'll do the broad range. One of the things that we have in the state of North Carolina is we have state law and we have state agencies which govern and manage how cities spend money, how we collect money and how we spend money. So every year we're required to perform an audit. Every year I'm required to present to City Council with a balanced budget recommendation, and every year the City Council, almost without fail, unless something does go catastrophically wrong, has to adopt a balanced budget by the end of the fiscal year, which is June 30. And so those become, and others that Jeff can probably mention, become kind of the bookends for how governments, all governments, local governments in the state of North Carolina, including counties, taxing districts, sewer authorities, all of them that are public agencies, have to manage the public finances. We also have to put for inspection a copy of the budget, the audit documents, everything that we have are public records. And so the transparency is built and baked into who we are and how we operate, but that does not necessarily mean that access does not mean awareness on the citizen's part. And so we do things like today, where we're talking to whether it's employees or whether it's business owners or citizens about the budget process. We're talking about the city's priorities. We do it as well through the public hearing that are required to be held. We do it every month through the required public comment sections that council has, where people can ask questions. We also do it, again, that people have an opportunity to file a complaint with our fraud, waste, and abuse hotline. We have an ethics commission if someone feels that they have been aggrieved. So the state of North Carolina, is probably tops among most states in that you have access to almost all public records, particularly financial, unless, of course, it's some provision that is carved out in state law. And the real thing is that citizens, we hope, are interested enough to take advantage of that.
Yeah. And you know, we, on that note, on our website, we have the Budget Chronicles. So those are all chronicled, but the current budget year is always updated, and when new documents come, they're posted frequently. But I'll let you continue, Jeff.
Sure. So building on what Doug was talking about in North Carolina, beyond those regulatory components, we kind of take it as a personal mission with the budget and all of our financial documents. If you think about them as a collective, they draw a thread through a financial year so that you can see the progress and kind of what's happening. Just like if you open your checkbook, I can tell you what your priorities are. Well, we can show where we spend our money, how that goes. And we as a staff really work on trying to create a document that's understandable by the public. We work with your team here in Marcom. And this is a transition over the years in government finance. It's gone from being more of a financial document to a communications piece,
yeah,
a strategy document. I would tell you that your budget's the most important strategic document that you adopt on an annual basis, because it's the only piece of it that's law related to your strategic plan and as we go forward. So we see those opportunities, create those opportunities, being responsive to the residents. We have email availability if, you know, we've talked to residents that have come up and wanted to chat about the budget or asked a specific question through open records requests, all those different things. So we really try to hide nothing. We try to explain as much as we can.
Right.
It can be complex. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, there's 10,000 plus lines that make up a budget document, that make up these numbers we're talking about. So
and when you say lines, you're talking each individual expense that right. the city
each account.
Up. Yeah, each account. Yeah.
Yep. So an account is just a group of expenditures or revenues. So we have 10,000 lines we keep track of through our systems, what's referred to as an ERP, which is our bookkeeping system.
Right.
So all those things, but we really try to focus on making these documents understandable. And as Doug mentioned, doing things like this and speaking to groups. I mean, we are available and we come and talk about all this. The staff is well-versed, so we can come and answer questions. But really, we want to make it accessible and understandable for the public.
Yeah. So, final question before I turn it over to you for anything that I may have forgotten. What are the future challenges? What are the most significant financial challenges that the city of Fayetteville sees this year? But then, you know, what's the 1, 3, 5 year look, and maybe the 20 year if you want to look over the horizon a little bit?
I think the number one challenge that local governments face in Fayetteville in particular is recruiting and retaining qualified staff to actually do the work. We have real challenges because we have such a demand for transparency, for the work that we do, the volume of the budget that Jeff talked about, the finances that we manage. We have to have people who have a certain level of experience and education to help us manage and expense the budget. Well, that makes them very attractive as well for the private sector or right. for other local governments. Mm-hmm. And so Fayetteville being home to Fort Liberty, we have a lot of churn where people come in with family members to serve at Fort Liberty. And when they transition out, they have more skills that they've been able to help us with and develop here in the city of Fayetteville, but then they're gone. And so we've always had a churn of staff members, but right now it seems even more pronounced where there just aren't people who are interested in not just our jobs, but in jobs in general, but the work still remains. The other real challenge I think that we have looking forward is that the cost of goods and services is clearly outstripping most people's paychecks, and it's also outstripping on a monthly basis what we have budgeted on an annual basis. And so we will put out to bid, let's say a fire truck. And based on past experience, we'd say a fire truck maybe $500,000. Well, when we put it out to bid and we go to look at it on state contract with the bells and whistles that we need for it to serve us for 5 to 7 years, it turns out to be $600,000. And so then we've got to go back and readjust the budget to actually go in and find additional monies to put toward it. And then the last one is we are in the era of high growth, with the voters having approved $35 million in Parks Recreation Bond Referendum almost 7 years ago, $97 million in GO Bond Referendum proceeds for public safety, infrastructure, and affordable housing of sorts a year and a half ago, as well as the $40 million in ARPA funding that I talked about, the millions of dollars of grant funding that the city staff have diligently pursued. We've got money, we have needs, but we don't always have contractors and other private sector folks to help us achieve and develop those projects. And so we're sitting here quite often, we're dressed up, we're ready to go to the prom, we've got our invitation in hand, and there's no car to take us there. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like quite often. And so we rebid a lot of our projects. We will try to broaden the range of where we're looking at people to help us with them. We'll even break the projects up. But ultimately, there are certain things and limitations that government cannot do. And quite often now, which is something unique in my almost 25-year career in local government, we don't have private sector partners ready to help us build a fire station. We don't have partners ready and willing, able to help us actually install equipment. And so we're actually having to find different delivery methods to achieve things for which we actually have budget. Yeah.
And I'll build on what Doug is referring to, getting general contractors and so forth. So the city does have a program for tradesmen and skilled labor. If they want to become a general mm-hmm. contractor, running through HUB in partnership with Fayetteville State. Mm-hmm. So just reach out to our procurement office and we can get you signed up for that. But I think the biggest challenge, and we talked about it going back to personnel, the city has about 1,800 authorized positions. On any given day, we have 15 to 20% vacancy in that. Government's a people-heavy business. Mm-hmm. So we provide service, and providing that without staff becomes problematic. And we're not unlike, you know, going to any restaurant where you see help wanted signs and so forth. It's just kind of where the country is. But that's probably, in my mind, one of our biggest challenges going forward. And if you think about local government, we often stand in that gap for residents. So we deal a lot, you know, lately homelessness has been a big issue as it is nationally, but we've stood in that gap with our Day Resource Center and those things. So even our contractor there has said, you know what, at the end of the year, we're going to take a pass and move on. So we're having to go find another operator, which will be a challenge. We know that we'll get a handful, if not two or three proposals to operate that center. When used to, you know, my, like Doug said, 20, his 24 years, my 20 plus years, seeing that we would have contractors lining up to do that work, it's just not there. So every time we go out to build something, they're having trouble finding that. So the labor market locally, both for us as government and for those contractors and those organizations, presents a significant challenge, going back to the workforce discussion that we were having. So I think those are the key things. And I think Doug hit it pretty succinctly across the board. I just wanted to reiterate the finding people to do things. You have to have hands to do the work.
Right. Yeah. And that makes sense. So we covered a lot of topics today, all budget related, all City of Fayetteville related. But was there anything in particular that I failed to mention? Is there anything that you'd like to add, Jeff?
And I'll give it to Doug in 2 seconds, but I think, you know, our job as staff is to take those that vision from council and turn it into an operational plan. So as we work through the budget, creating fiscal sustainability, meaning that it's a balanced budget going forward and we can operate on the revenues available to us and the policy direction the council has given us. I know on a daily basis, that is the work we do, and it's critical to the public, although they don't see it. It goes on behind the scenes, and there's a lot of staff, and I just want to recognize that staff that does that work.
Right.
Because again, people make it go, and that's the biggest challenge. But and I'll give it to Doug on that.
Yeah, and I think for me, I would always say that governance is a shared responsibility. It's between the staff, it's between the council, but probably the largest and most important component is with the people. You know, we cannot govern people who don't wish to be governed. We can't manage folks who don't wish to be managed. And what we're finding is we really do welcome the public's involvement. We need their involvement to help shape their priorities. Everything that we've talked about today does not have anything to do with the reality that most of us see when we're driving into work. Jeff touched on the homeless situation that we have, but we also as a community, as a nation, have mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. We have drug abuse challenges. We have poverty. We have health challenges and disparities amongst our various communities in the country. Cities don't really tackle those issues.
Right.
But those are issues which we have to adapt to because they're real and present in our population as well. And so, but on balance, when I look back at it, and since 2004 when I first came to 2015 when I came back to now, and even where we sit, I'm very encouraged by where we are as a community. I'm very encouraged by where we are as an organization. We're doing really good stuff with the challenges that we have. And again, that starts because I think that we understand that staff has a role, council clearly has a role, and the public has a role as well. And I think that we're achieving that balance very well here in the City of Fayetteville.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your gentleman's time. Thank you for coming down, explaining a little bit more about the budget. That some of it I knew, some of it I didn't. Mm-hmm. Priorities for the city and how we get there. I also invite all of you to engage with the City of Fayetteville. There's multiple ways to do that. You can look us up on social media. You can check out our website, which is fayettevillenc.gov, or you can watch us on Fay TV. If you have a problem in the city, you can always dial up Fay Fix It and have that problem resolved as well. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time again. And until next time.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Fayetteville 411. The Fayetteville 411 is one of several podcasts that the city produces for our podcast channel, Radio Fayetteville, as we provide timely and informative updates every week on a variety of topics related to the City of Fayetteville. Be sure to subscribe to Radio Fayetteville on your favorite streaming platform.
You can also listen to every podcast that Radio Fayetteville has to offer by downloading the Fay TV streaming app, available now on Roku, Apple TV, Android TV, and Amazon Fire TV. You can view all of our video content by visiting faytv.net. To get information about city services, go to our webpage at fayettevillenc.gov. Thanks for joining us.